Hi, this is Eileen, and I will be reading the News Gazette for you today, Thursday, March 2nd, 2017. We'll begin with Legal Equivalent of Abracadabra. Court rules claim of ineffective counsel sufficient by Jim Day. After pleading guilty to aggravated battery and then acknowledging that he violated the terms of his conditional discharge sentence, one might think Quantrell Ayres would blame only himself for being behind bars. But prison inmates, with time on their hands, often look outward rather than inward. So Ayres, 27, sent a handwritten complaint about ineffective assistance of counsel to Champaign County Circuit Judge Thomas Stephanus. Which lawyer was ineffective? There were two involved in his case: an assistant public defender and local defense lawyer Michael McClellan, and Ayres didn't say. How was the unidentified lawyer ineffective? Ayres didn't say. With nothing more than Ayres' four words, ineffective assistance of counsel, to go on, Stephanus concluded the pro se motion was so lacking in specifics that no action was required. The appellate court upheld Stephanus' ruling, but now the Illinois Supreme Court, by a 4-3 vote, has ruled otherwise. In a recent decision, the High Court found, in effect, that those four words are the legal equivalent of magic words that require a judge to conduct a further investigation to determine whether to appoint a lawyer to pursue the defendant's claim. When a defendant brings a clear claim asserting ineffective assistance of counsel, either orally or in writing, this is sufficient to trigger the trial court's duty to conduct a Krenkel inquiry, Justice Ann Burke wrote in the court's majority opinion. A Krenkel inquiry refers to the 1984 decision in which the High Court ruled that the ineffective assistance claim mandates a court-directed inquiry and, possibly, the appointment of a new lawyer to determine whether to pursue the claim in a new hearing. The question the High Court addressed is what type of allegation the defendant must make to prompt further inquiry: a detailed or a bare-bones claim that his lawyer was inadequate. The court's majority found the claim can be bare bones, prompting the three dissenting judges to complain the majority new rule will require the trial court to carefully scrutinize the many pro se submissions it receives in search of the bare allegation. The reality is that when defendants have meritorious pro se claims, they don't simply say ineffective assistance of counsel and leave it at that. Instead, they complain about specific matters, actions that counsel took or failed to take, Justice Robert Thomas wrote in his dissent. Justices Charles Freeman, Thomas Kilbride, and Mary Jane Tighe joined Burke's majority opinion. Justice Lloyd Carmeier and Rita Garman backed Thomas' dissent. Ayres, who is being held at the state prison in Taylorville, is scheduled to be released in December 2017, but he'll be returned to Champaign County soon to allow Judge Stephanus to carry out the High Court's order that he question Ayres about his ineffective assistance claim. Ayres, represented by Public Defender's Office, pleaded guilty in April 2013 to aggravated battery and was sentenced to 12 months conditional discharge, a form of probation that does not require regular reporting to the probation officer. In July 2013, prosecutors took steps to revoke Ayres' sentence because he left the state without court approval. After Ayres acknowledged his violation, Stephanus revoked his conditional discharge and resentenced him on the original aggravated battery conviction to 9 years in prison. At sentencing, Ayres explained that he left the state after a conversation with a local lawyer, McClellan, who advised him to get the hell out of Dodge because Ayers was the subject of another police investigation. Although McClellan testified at Ayers' sentencing hearing, he never formally represented Ayers. The court's majority said that if DeFantis had ordered Ayers returned from prison and questioned him about his charge, the matter could have been cleared up. Had the trial court conducted even a minimal inquiry, it surely would have ascertained which the defendant was complaining about. If Ayers' claim was directed at McClellan, who did not represent Ayers during any of the relevant proceedings, the circuit court could have dispensed with the matter immediately, and there would have been no grounds for the appeal, Burke wrote. Judge Thomas, however, said the court's majority misinterpreted the nature of the preliminary inquiry it wants trial judge to conduct. He said a preliminary inquiry is not to afford a defendant a chance to come up with a specific claim, but to evaluate a specific claim, provided one has actually been made. If that was the law, it's not anymore. Judges now are obligated to investigate any post-trial claims of ineffective assistance, substantive or not. Given the frequency with which such claims are made, state prison guards can look forward to transporting inmates back and forth to court in great numbers in the coming days. The next article, Next Step, A Look Around. Group to Tour Old Homes Near Central High by Nicole LaFon. In Champaign, representatives from a statewide historic landmark group will soon tour some of the properties surrounding Central High School that will be affected by its expansion. Last spring, before Unit 4 came up with its final plan for Central, Landmarks Illinois listed the high school and its surrounding neighborhood as one of the most endangered historical landmarks in the state. The nonprofit preservation agency took notice after Unit 4 formed a facility committee and began exploring options, which included tearing down the 82-year-old school and building a new across the street or expanding the current facility on site and cutting into the surrounding neighborhood. Now that district voters have approved Central's on-site renovation and expansion, Landmarks Illinois officials say they are pleased with Unit 4's plan to save the historic high school, but would like to visit the neighborhood to see if there's a way to preserve some of the homes the district has other plans for. The school board has purchased option agreements on 10 properties surrounding the high school, including the former McKinley YMCA, the Christian Science Church, and the Burnham Mansion. The state preservation group would like to survey the properties before construction begins to see if that are any reuse possibilities for the buildings, said Frank Butterfield, director of the organization's Springfield office. The local Preservation and Conservation Association, PACA, has been in contact with the school board about saving or moving some of the more historically relevant homes in the neighborhood, as well and will likely be involved in an upcoming tour. We've been talking with the school board and Landmarks Illinois, bringing in a preservation or design expert or engineers to see what options remain as the district enters into the design phase, such as a building being repurposed to meet a need, Butterfield said. We want to commend the school district for recommitting and reinvesting in Central as a neighborhood high school, but we would like to continue to offer expertise and resources that would allow for the reuse of one or more of the neighborhood properties. At a recent meeting, President Chris Kopel informed the school board of his communication with Butterfield and asked Unit 4 administrators to schedule a visit. This will continue our conversation with preservationists as we look into continuing to expand Central, he said. Next is from the local section, Just One Question. A group of students at a Champaign middle school has a pretty simple goal this year, to show the community that Edison cares. Edison's Character, Attitude, Respect, Education Service Program, CARES, launched this school year by Dean of Students Darren O'Connell, is designed to award students who do well in school, in class, and don't get into trouble with special community service project trips. So far, the group has helped clean up trash at Dodds Park and read to younger students at Southside Elementary. After each community service project, the students are treated to a special lunch courtesy of various sponsors, including El Toro, Texas Roadhouse, and Sam's Club. Nicole LaFon tagged along an Edison student's visit to Southside and asked the middle schoolers, "What do you get out of helping younger students read?" Samira Stewart replied, "I like how we can come and be inspirational on the littler kids, and maybe they'll look at us and want to stay in school. Maybe they'll continue to do good and get involved in a program like this when they're older and want to interact more with other children in other grades. I look at these kids as younger siblings because I have a younger brother. When he wants someone to read to him, I volunteer because when it's time to go to school, he'll remember how I read to him. I want them to go home and read their books how I read to them." Nate Allen responded, "The younger kids are really funny. They have so much enjoyment with you being here. And they like you being here because they don't always have new people coming in. The younger kids can learn responsibility from us, and the older kids can learn how to control and help the younger students." Frahi Agwal responded, "It's a good learning experience for the future. Teaching these kids, if you want to have a family later or you want to be helpful in the community, you just need to keep doing stuff like this to learn. For the younger kids, it's a good learning experience too. They get to learn how older kids act. It's also important for the older kids to learn something from each of them. Everyone is teaching each other." Emily Rush responded, "I like how we get to interact with younger kids and help them learn different things. Reading, you're going to need it all through your life. Even in sixth grade, I struggled a bit with reading. So I feel like if I help them now at a younger age, they won't struggle as hard when they're older. I wish I had something like this when I was younger." Gorney Kais said, "Some kids might not know how to read, and they might have trouble with their reading. So I think the bigger kids can really help break it down for them." Princesa Gomez said, "I like to play with the kids and stuff, so they make it fun for me. I like to help, and they can help teach them stuff they don't know, just in case they need help." Franklin Crawford said, "It's me giving back. It's fun. Sometimes some kids struggle to read. It can be difficult, so we can guide them." The next article, Chief at the U of I, Raquel, still on the move, from Champaign. Steve Raquel found himself enjoying a bit of downtime Wednesday during an open portion of his schedule. In a corner room in the library inside Gregory Hall, where he teaches a sports public relations course at the University of Illinois, the U of I instructor relaxed even as his iPhone chimed regularly with text messages and social media alerts. It's rare to find him sitting still. A couple of times each week, Raquel makes the commute from his home in Naperville to CU to lecture at his alma mater. "It's easy. It's 2 hours door-to-door," he said. "I have a back way down off the highway, and I get to see the back roads of Central Illinois." While he could probably make the drive in his sleep, thankfully, Raquel hasn't closed his eyes behind the wheel. I can really zone out and just put in it on cruise control, he says. You get into a really good groove. I know exactly the time I need to leave the house in order to pull into my class at the right time every time I come down. An adjunct professor at the U of I since 2014, Raquel wakes up at 7 a.m. and has the kids out of the house by 7:45 for school. By 8:15, he's on the road. It's always okay to get here a little bit early, but if I don't get in the car by 8:45 or 9 at the latest, then I'm really in trouble, he says. He's typically home by 9:45 p.m. Not this Wednesday, however, as he attended Illinois basketball game against Michigan State at the State Farm Center. The weekly commute is just one of many items on Raquel's plate. His primary job is that of the owner of Illinois Online Venture, a social digital media consulting business. He dedicates all of Mondays and Fridays to that endeavor. I have a team of people who work with me, and I've been doing this so many years, they can handle the majority of the work. But it's good to connect with them, Raquel said. He and wife, Stephanie, have three teenage daughters who are all active and maintain busy schedules of their own. On top of that, the Raquels signed on to be a foster family with the group called Safe Families, where they step in at times of crisis. Currently, the Raquels are fostering three children, two boys and a girl, all under the age of six. It always has been in our hearts to do foster care, Raquel said. It can all be overwhelming, but it isn't about us. Last year, Raquel and his family moved into a slightly larger home and were approved by Safe Families shortly after Thanksgiving to foster children. A half hour after their approval, they received a call saying a placement of three was available for them. Our desire was to have siblings because in many situations, siblings get separated, Raquel said. The mom was homeless. She had six kids, so we took three of them. We were supposed to have them for 30 days, but I think we're going to have them for up to 6 months now. While living with the Raquels, the three children have every opportunity to go visit with their mom and reunite with family when the need arises. But for now, they're going to school in the Naperville district and living happily with Raquel and his family. We're the aunt and uncle you thought you never had, who come in and help out to say, get your life in order and we'll take care of your kids, Raquel said. We have a full house of eight, so eight is enough. I'm not the only boy anymore, so that's good. When these children go back to being with their mom, the Raquels will foster other children in need. Normal placements are kids under two and usually between a week and 90 days, he said. Our situation right now is really, really unique. Raquel, 46, grew up in Champaign, graduated from Central High School in 1988, and received a bachelor's and master's degree from the U of I in advertising. During his time at Illinois, Raquel portrayed Chief Alanowick in 1992. That fact, though, is not something brought up in his classrooms. I don't even lead with that. It is never something I lead with in class because I feel like the focus of class and education is the education piece, Raquel said. Even my sports PR class that I taught for the first time last year, I never brought it up. I'm not ashamed of it, but the focus is not about my role back then. A regular attendee of the U of I sports events, Raquel likes to sit back and watch the reactions that fans in the stands at basketball and football games have when the 3-1 is played at halftime. I'll sing the alma mater with everybody, but I get a big smile just to see people's reactions and sit there and go, you know, still 10 years later and people still love the Chief, he said. Even though I can't dance the thing anymore, it's still a big part of my experience at the university. A quarter century after his graduation, Raquel remains a big part of the U of I, too. The next article, Truck Driver Injured and Rollover Amid Storm, by Mary Schwenk. In Mahomet, an Ohio truck driver was taken to the hospital after his semi-trailer truck rolled over on Interstate 74 near Mahomet during Wednesday morning's storm. Illinois State Police said rain and heavy winds about 3:30 a.m. may have caused Terrence T. Hassan's rig to roll over and dump its load just west of Mahomet. Frozen goods from the trailer spilled out onto the road, blocking all westbound lanes for a time, police said. Hassan, 26, of Cleveland, was westbound when his rig left the road to the right, entered the right ditch, then came back on the road and rolled onto its side. Police said he was wearing a seatbelt and no tickets were issued. Authorities said Hassan was taken to Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana, where he was listed in good condition. Next article, Eighth Arrest Made in Connection with Attack, by Mary Schwenk in Urbana. One of nine young men accused of participating in a beating in Campustown last September that preceded the fatal shooting of an innocent bystander has been arrested. Champaign Police Detective Sergeant Dave Griffith said officers found Kiwan Carter, 18, at the home on Colleen Drive in West Champaign on Tuesday morning. Police had been looking for Carter, who listed an address in the 1400 block of Paula Drive, Champaign, since November. He was charged then with aggravated battery in connection with the September 25th attack on Edward McCraney, 22, of Champaign, that happened in the 300 block of East Green Street, Champaign. Several men who were at the party at an apartment in that block believe that McCraney was responsible for spilling a drink on a guest. The angry partiers turned on him in the parking lot outside the apartment building, kicking and stomping him until he lost consciousness. When his friend Robbie Patton, 19, saw what was happening to McCraney, he allegedly began firing at the kickers. None of them were hit, but four other people who had no involvement were hit. George Gorchev, 22, of Mundelein, was killed and three other men injured. Patton is charged with Mr. Korchev's murder and aggravated battery with a firearm for shooting the others. He is scheduled to be back in court March 14th. With the arrest of Carter, that leaves one man still wanted in connection with the McCraney attack. Five of those charged pleaded guilty and have received prison sentences ranging from 30 months to 5 years. Another has pleaded and is waiting sentencing, and another is in custody waiting for trial on the aggravated battery and an unrelated home invasion armed robbery case. Carter was expected to appear in arraignment court Wednesday afternoon. Next article, Man Failed to Show Up to Begin Prison Sentence, by Mary Schwenk in Champaign. A Champaign man who failed to show up to begin his prison sentence in January was arrested Tuesday. Champaign Police Detective Sergeant Dave Griffith said Juan Carter, 37, was found at an apartment in the 2400 block of North Neal Street, Champaign. Champaign detectives and federal marshals located Carter not long after they had arrested his son, Kiwan Carter, 18, for aggravated battery for the alleged participation in a Campustown beating last September. The elder Carter pleaded guilty in late December to unlawful use of weapons by a felon and was sentenced to 3 years in prison. Judge Tom DeFanis agreed to let Carter remain free until January 25th, when he was supposed to turn himself in to begin serving his sentence. When he did not show up, DeFanis ordered that he be arrested and held without bond. Carter admitted that on August 15, 2015, he possessed a gun, which he is not allowed to have because of prior convictions. Assistant State's Attorney Larry Salova, who prosecuted Carter, said Champaign police tried to stop a van that Carter was riding in that day on North Prospect Avenue near Town Center Boulevard. He got out and ran from the officers, tossing a gun as he fled. Officers found it as they traced his path of flight. Salava said, Carter's prior convictions include residential burglary, aggravated driving under the influence, resisting arrest, domestic battery, and driving under revocation. In return for his plea to unlawful use of a weapon by a felon, a charge of resisting arrest was dismissed. Next article, Rantoul resident facing federal child pornography charges, by Mary Schwenk. A Rantoul man is in the Ford County Jail on federal charges of possession and receipt of child pornography. You end up in the hell you can't get out of, Thomas Ibbenfeld, 58, who listed an address in the 1,000 block of Pine Crest Drive, told FBI agents who had been investigating him for months. Ibbenfeld was arrested February 23rd and charged in the criminal complaint filed by the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Central District of Illinois. He appeared that same day before U.S. Magistrate Judge Eric Long, who ordered he be detained pending the March 9th hearing. In the criminal complaint, it's alleged that between September 1st, 2016 and February 22nd, Ibbenfeld was assessing files containing pornographic images of prepubescent girls engaged in sex with adults and animals. FBI agents did a court-authorized search of Ibbenfeld's home on February 22nd and found an external hard drive under a couch that Ibbenfeld slept on. Agents observed the hard drive had a voluminous amount of material consistent with child erotica, the complaint said. A further search of that living room turned up a laptop computer, which they learned belonged to Ibbenfeld, hidden up the flue of the chimney. Ibbenfeld told agents he had engaged in peer-to-peer file sharing of pornography for several years. However, he told agents his intent was only to download materials for his own use and not share them with others. The complaint said Ibbenfeld expressed shame for his involvement with child pornography and admitted knowing that possessing it was illegal. But he told agents that sometimes people can't control their demons. The next article, Woman Playing Game on Cell Phone Robbed in Urbana, by Mary Schwenk. A woman playing a game on her cell phone outside her apartment building late Tuesday was robbed of that phone. Urbana Police Investigator Doug Pipkins said 35-year-old resident of an apartment in the 900 block of South Vine Street was sitting on the steps to her building at about 11:20 p.m. playing a game when two men came up from behind her, put an object to her head, and demanded her phone. The woman did not get a good look at the men and was not sure what they put to her head, but told police she thought it was a gun. She handed over the phone, and they ran off. The incident happened so quickly that the woman was unable to give the police much of a description of the robbers. Anyone with information is asked to call the Urbana Police at 217-384-2320. You may also contact Crime Stoppers at 217-373-TIPS or 373tips.com. Or through a free app on smartphones called P3 Tips. Tips are kept anonymous and a reward may be paid. Okay, I'm going to take a short break right now and I will be right back with part two of the News Gazette for Thursday, March 2nd. See you in a bit.